So without further ado, I'm going to hand the controls over to you. I'm going to put myself on mute. So if you need to talk to me, realize that I've got a little bit of time to unmute. But other than that, I shall be here listening. Thank you. Here is Richard Stead from KIB to talk about OSCN ions.
Thank you very much, Kate, and again, good morning to everybody. I am happy to take questions at any time. It would be better if they're left to the end. And if something I say doesn't come across very well, again, ask me at the end, and I will go through that bit again. What I'm going to do today, I'm talking to the Nutrition Network. I'm going to talk to you first about how I came across this product, why I came across it, the chemistry behind it, and so forth, how we do things, how we deliver them, and so forth. My first intention was that I wanted to have a treatment for infections. And I made this list of what I thought people wanted, having had to have treatments for infections myself in the past and my children and so forth. So what did I want to get? And so these were the 13 characteristics that I wanted to get. And later on, I'll talk about how well we have done, I have done with that. So let me tell you then what the program will be today. It's going to be two halves. One is going to be introducing ourselves and the chemistry. And then secondly, now that we've got a product, what are we going to be able, or what are you going to be able to do with it for your clients? And we've got, even though I say it myself, quite a lot of exciting things. And nutritionists, I'm so glad that I was right from the beginning involved with nutritionists, because what my product does with the microbiome, the gut, is just amazing. I could never have dreamt that a product that I was involved with could be so quite so clever. But it's come at the right time, because the microbiome is probably the hottest topic in medicine and in nutrition than anything else. Much hotter than HIV, much hotter than COVID, although it does touch upon COVID, and so on. So later on, please listen to the chemistry, and forgive me if I lead you by the nose, but I will be taking you on a story, a journey. This is me. That's well, you'll see my picture. I'm the chief executive of Cures Group, which owns KIB Healthcare. And I developed KIB 500 personally. I have a background of chemistry at university. And since I left university, what have I done? I worked in a sales company. I sold washing machines. I sold kitchen cabinets. I sold tins of paint. Then I came back to chemistry with a company that's now defunct, with ICI. And then I moved on into chemicals, and I've started a few companies and sold them, mostly in the chemicals and chemicals for the food industry. So if you want to blame anybody for the fact that there are too many sweeteners on the market, too many preservatives in foods, you're looking at the man that was involved very heavily with them 30 years ago. I sold more MSG every year than anybody else in the UK. I sold more sucralose and saccharins and or aspartame. I made good money out of it, and now I've devoted all of that money to developing KIB, and it will cure many of the problems that might have resulted from the chemicals that I sold. But towards the end of my career, I got involved with natural chemicals and looking at using them, how nature uses them. In particular, I was interested in preservatives that people were extracting from the skins of fruit. And they were there to protect the fruit, apples, oranges, bananas, from pathogens trying to get in, whether that pathogen was a virus or bacterial. And so I got looking at how did the skin protect itself? But before I move on to that, let me show you something that I've identified and what I think is to blame. In the healthcare crisis, that we are now living longer because of the cleverness of the pharmaceutical industry, but we have poor health much, much longer. You see, from 2002 to 2016, in that time, we lived longer, but the bad health period, normally towards the end of our life, was extended. So we had longer life, but bad health. The pharmaceutical industry and chemical industry and all of these and the NHS were maintaining our last years. We were being maintained in bad health. And it's sad to say it was men. For men, it's not so bad. We only have 16 years of bad health at the end of our life. But women, which most of you are, we have 19 years of bad health. And is that worthwhile? Is it worthwhile? Is it better thy life to live 16 years bad health than only 5 years, more than from 50 years ago or 100 years ago? And is a longer life a better life? Maybe not if it's involved in really bad health towards the end of it. The deterioration, in my opinion, started in the late 1800s. And that was the time when industrialization came along, agricultural techniques changed, food quality, processed food came along, white bread was introduced, sugar, processed sugar, beautiful white sugar were introduced, the types of employment that we had. So there were less farm workers as horses came in, and then followed by tractors, lifestyles, and of course, I believe that allopathic medical and health techniques have not helped to reduce this amount of bad health that we have at the end. But we can do things about it. Here's a history of medicine starting in 2000 BC. It can go back to 3000 BC to Hippocrates, when he was talking about food and medicine being the same thing. But 2000 years ago, feeling ill, eat this root. When we are going back to plants now, if you follow my circle all the way around and to 2020, what's the thing we should be doing? We should be vegans. We should be eating plant-based food, not processed plant food, but we should. And we've gone through all of those things and we come back in a full circle, which is very typical of life and all sorts of things that we do. And of course, it's often thought that the greatest thing for the health was antibiotics. They truly were great. It was absolutely amazing what was achieved. But because of human foolishness, so we can't rely upon ABs as much as we used to. Resistance has been developed against them. But it's not all doom and gloom, because it's only resistance against a few. There's a vast majority of infections that we have can be dealt with existing medicines and vaccines. But there are still a lot that cause a lot of trouble through their resistance. And what happened before antibiotics? Well, we had to rely upon our immune system. Just let me pull this down. Oops. And what is the immune system? I was interested, as I told you, from fruit, apples, oranges, in the skin. What was it that was in their skin that protected them from the ingress of infections? There must have been something. And we found some of those with people I worked with in preservatives that were then used in the food industry. But I thought our skin must have something. There must be something about our skin, because we do have holes in our skin. We have our mouth. We have our backsides. We have the vagina. We have our eyes. So the physical aspects of print of the immune system, of which the skin was one, and the cough is a physical aspect of the immune system. We throw it out, our eyelashes, our eyelids, and vomiting. But it's come back to the main one. The skin, which is the largest organ that we have, a huge surface area and the holes. And I wanted to identify how these holes worked, how they were protected. And just looking at those, so I studied those. Now I want to ask you a question. Imagine you have just cut your finger. What is your first reaction? What do you do with your finger? You put it in your mouth. I wonder why you do that. You don't think about it, you just do it. And imagine again, you're a small child, you're 4 years old, and you've been running and you fall over and you hurt yourself. And what do you do? What do you do? What's the first thing you do after you've started to cry? You go and see your mum. And what does she do? What does your mum do? Besides cuddling you, she will kiss it better. And there are the initials of my company, Kiss It Better, K-I-B. And why does she kiss it better? It's a reflex action by the mother. And the child believes everything is better after that. And she kisses you as you put your finger in your mouth because there's a fantastic sterilization kit in your saliva. And there's no time to think about it. It's a reflex action. And that's part of the innate immune system. There's no time to think. Humans can't interfere with it because they would mess it up if they could. But we do it. The innate immune system jumps into action as soon as it is needed, whereas the other parts of the chemical and biochemical aspects of our immune system, they take time to work. They've got to identify and recognize what is the pathogen that's coming in. And in our saliva and in our tears, we have the mechanisms to create a product called hypothiocyanate, OSCN. This is its molecular structure and shape. And OSCN, oxygen, sulfur, carbon, nitrogen. And it has a negative sign. And you would then have attached to that a sodium ion or a hydrogen ion. And you see there at the bottom, I talk of references. I've got a long list of references, which I can share with you later if you want to look at any of these. And so where does it come from and how is it made? It's made very simply I'm trying to move the slides down, excuse me. No, you have to move it up, that's why. In our tears, we have two components of the three that are needed to make hypothiocyanate. The top one is sodium thiocyanate. And thiocyanate is present in our saliva, in our bloods, and various places around our body all the time. We absorb the SCN level, the thiocyanate, from green vegetables. And it's an essential that we do. One of the reasons our grandmothers told us, eat more vegetables. We needed those also in the saliva and our tears. We would have tears peroxidase. In saliva, it's called salivary peroxidase. And peroxidase is an enzyme which the one role of that is to react with hydrogen peroxide, take off an oxygen from H2O2, and put it onto the thiocyanate to replace the sodium ion. And the hydrogen peroxide that is needed is introduced by the pathogens. Or the pathogens are exuding hydrogen peroxide all the time. So this is a reflex action, an instant action. When those three components are together, hypothiocyanate is formed. And then the hypothiocyanate turns around and attacks the sulfhydryl group, which is on the cell wall of the pathogen, upsetting the balance. The sulfhydryl group is responsible for the transfer and the change of sodium and potassium ions to make sure that the cell is working well. It also, at that point, is responsible for the absorption of amino acids. But when it's messed up, that sulfhydryl group, by the hypothiocyanate, the cell becomes invalid and it's unable to reproduce, and so you don't get sick. And the cause of the sickness is eliminated. So it was my job, having identified this, to create a delivery system, how to get hypothiocyanate into the body. And the easiest way was through the mouth. So I developed a system where you mix the things together and consumed it. And many of you will have seen this and mixed it and drunk it. I always thought that was cumbersome, but I could not find a way to make it in a factory. The hypothiocyanate has a very short life, maximum 2 hours. After you've made it, by the time you were, if you wait 2 hours, instead of being at around 80 parts per million that we manufacture it at, you've only got 25 parts per million. That's at normal room temperatures. If it's cold, it might be a little longer, a little higher. But so if you make it in a factory, by the time it gets to the factory gate and out to be distributed, there won't be anything left in the water. It can't be made as a syrup. You can't make it. It needs to be in liquid form, so you can't make it as a tablet. So it has to be in a liquid form and a kit that you make up at the point of use. And what can it do? Well, there's lots of, you see the references at the bottom of this slide. These are references that have been written about this product, this particular ion, for more than 30 years. It states in those references that it is, by academics and researchers, that it will be active against gram-negative and gram-positive bacteria. And it works against fungals, like Candida and herpes. And on the virus side, there's papers that say it's effective at destroying type A and type B, which are the ones that make us sick, and influenza. And, well, what will it do against COVID? Well, it works very well against COVID. You can have a COVID test today as being positive. You take OSCN afterwards, and tomorrow you don't have COVID any longer. Incredible, but it's true. It's true. And I've got lots of references down there. I have letters from doctors, qualified GPs, who've written to me to say it works. I have used it. And it does work against COVID. And it works against so many other things. But then it should. Nature designed it to do this one task, to protect us, to fight and attack that sulfhydryl group. So what about the safety, the toxicology? I make a kit, or the kit that you make up, I should say, has got 70 parts per million of OSCN, and it's 500 mils, so it's delivering 35 milligrams of this killer, this destroyer. And so is that safe? The breakdown products will be oxygen, which goes onto the sulfhydryl group, and then you're left with thiocyanate, the SCN, which is in your body all the time. So there's no problem with that. It recognizes it. You can absorb too much, and I'll move on to some numbers that we have down below. And these are details that have been listed in German Ministry of Health, because in East Germany, thiocyanate was used to work against hypertension. It was used in the UK, in Britain, in London, in the Victorian times. It was used to lower blood pressure. It was known then. So these are the safety data. How much can you absorb in a day? 125 milligrams, which is four doses in a day. If you did that, more than four doses a day for 10 days, then you possibly becomes toxic and you would die. 500 milligrams a day, well, you've got to absorb 12 or 15 KIBs. If you were doing that, I'd become very rich very quickly. But you get 1,000 milligrams, so that's 30 doses a day. You'd start to feel toxic after a couple of days, and then you would die after 4 days. But 30 doses, that's 15 liters of water. Jokingly, you might have drowned before then. But that's the relative safety of the product. And it's safe enough that it has been approved for food use by the WHO, particularly in milk and dairy. It's used in China, Cuba, Africa, and other places. In milk, where you might have high temperatures, and the farm is many, many miles from the processing plant. So you want the milk to stay fresh tasting and fresh feeling before it gets, when it arrives at the processing plant. And so it's been allowed by WHO for that. In Australia and in New Zealand, it's approved for the use on meat, where meat, and you put it on a counter, as you know, nice red meat, which you all eat lots and lots and lots a day, of course, because you're all meat eaters. It stops the meat turning brown. As we know, you have lovely, bright looking red meat. It looks good and fresh, but you leave it on the counter for too long and it starts to go brown. So that helps butchers. In the US, the FDA has given it a GRAS status, which means that's generally regarded as safe. And the information that was presented to the FDA, it was satisfied them so to, at that time, they had no questions about its safety or its efficacy. But that's only in specific applications. The dairy-derived products such as yogurts and such products. And in Europe, in the USA, it's also been approved for use in dental toothpastes and cosmetic as stabilizers in cosmetics. And in dental, it's used to mouthwash for gargles, and it's very good at removing infections in the mouth. And it's widely used for a condition called dry mouth, which often occurs due to cancer treatments where people are undergoing chemotherapy or radiation, and that messes up the quality of the saliva and the enzymes, so that your saliva isn't able to look after as well as it should in your mouth, and you might get dry mouth. And then that toothpaste or the gargle works very well. And there are a few dentists, people who are against using the likes of mercury and more holistic treatments. A few of them have got this, which they use regularly to get rid of infections. Because when you've got an infection in the gum or in the root of the tooth, no work can be done. So that speeds up the ability to be treated much earlier than normal and without having to use antibiotics. So that's the background to the chemistry. That's how I found it and what I thought it could do and what I was planning to do. So how well have I done? Well, many of you have tried it, but let me tell you what we have seen. My first clinical experience with the product was a GP who was prepared and wanted something other than antibiotics. And he went out of his way and he said, it began in February, 1 year, a few years ago, what I'm going to do, Richard, is infections, when they come in, I will offer them, and if they do have an infection, I will offer them a choice. Traditional antibiotic treatment or Richard's magic potion. And so he recorded this and he do, I'm trying to move the slides down, sorry. And he, there were 22 patients that accepted. Three of them had Helicobacter pylori. Five of them had soft tissue, like a cut hand. One was a carpenter who the chisel or the saw had gone awry and had opened his hand up. Upper respiratory tract, we had viral and bacterial. And that was identified purely by the symptoms that were presented to the doctor. And then pneumonia, three patients. And I'm delighted to say with the single dose, 22 successes. But there were no, there were also 22 that were given antibiotics. He was determined that just as many were given antibiotics as given my product. And the all the antibiotics were successful and removed the symptoms. But there were no side effects reported. And that's not really a surprise because OSCN and SCN is in our bodies all the time. So it's not something new that the body has to come across. Then we moved on, and the same doctors in a local hospital, they three of them were prepared to treat upper respiratory tract. I chose that condition because that was the leading reason that people lost days' work. And that was the reason when more antibiotics were prescribed than for any other condition. And when most of the upper respiratory are caused by viral, the antibiotics, of course, were doing no good at all for those. And people lost money when they couldn't work. And typically you would be off work for 4 days. And typically it was twice a year. So people were losing 8 days' work. Employers were losing 8 days of employee time. The government was losing money, whichever government it was, because people weren't at work, they weren't earning money, they weren't paying tax on that. And the hospitals had expenses and costs and so forth. So it was a huge burden, economic burden, on the nation, whichever nation it would be. And we had 75% success in 24 hours. The patient presented on day one, which might have been the third day when they were feeling sick, or the second day, or the fourth day. And then they were told to come back the next day. And 75% of them presented, and the patient and the doctor both agreed that the patient was fit to go back to work. So instead of losing 4 days, they lost only one, a great improvement for life, for workers. And these are the record that I created of them. And here's a close-up. As you can see, they, patient on the right hand, the left-hand column, patient number, male or female, their age, and what the doctor wrote. We didn't do any clinical trial examination. There was no blood taken, there was no swabs, nothing. It was purely based upon symptoms. And that's what the doctor would have described it as, pharyngitis or viral bronchitis or asthma or whatever. And in the middle column, we can see how many doses did they have. And we had almost no failures. And the X's, they mark which doctor it was. At the top are the initials of the three doctors involved. And then on the far right, it's comments by the doctor. No change, as you see, I've highlighted just the one. Recovered at day three, rapid recovery, same day or the following day. It was an extremely successful trial. It was a study, it wasn't a proper trial. There were no double blind and so forth. Myself and the doctors agreed, they all know what upper respiratory tract, what course it follows. We didn't need, there's enough people that come in with it So we did it without the normal standard and the double blind controls. So we felt that we could move on, but what about dosing? So instead of looking at E. coli or at influenza or at a fungal infection, because my product works against all of them, how much would be needed? And I chose and decided that it would be a mathematical model. One ion of mine can destroy one pathogen cell, which is all well and good, but how many pathogens have you got inside? And sadly, there is nobody's ever presented a way of measuring how many pathogens. You've got 58,000,200,000 E. coli, and that's what's making you poorly. So it was a case of mild and recent infections, which would be such as an upper respiratory tract, would be a low dose, one or two on successive days. Mild and persistent, which would be something that maybe you'd the patient had had some sort of flu, and they'd been given a treatment which worked, but after two or three days, all the symptoms returned. And maybe this was a third time, then you need a higher dose, maybe two doses on two successive days. With my product, we knock down very quickly the pathogen. But pathogens, as we know, are very virile. They will double again very quickly. So instead of doing as is typical with the medications, take this and come and see us in a week, we needed to act quickly. So so dose today, dose tomorrow. Don't give it time to grow any longer. Or two doses today, knock it down and keep it down. And then with the very last suggestion I have, and that's for heavy and persistent people that have had E. coli poisoning for 3 years, and they go on antibiotic course and they knock it down and they feel good, but a week after they've stopped the course, everything comes back and they're just as bad. So much higher dosing, and the most that anybody has told me that they've taken to really, really sick, some people have taken four doses on day one, and then two doses the following day, and two doses the following day, so that you knock it down, and you knock it down again, and you knock it down again, in the hope that the immune system then is competent to take over, that the levels of infection and the amount of pathogens you have is very low, so the immune system can come over. And I have one lady in Canada. She had Lyme disease, and 6 or 7 years ago, she contacted me and I sent her 8 doses. And she took them, 4 and 2 and 2. She always knew, she said, that for her, the Lyme disease reared its head every 28 days. It was not in a cycle with her menstrual cycle, not those same 28 days. It had its own 28 days. And she always knew 2 or 3 days beforehand, and that it fitted the calendar, that she was going to have Lyme disease symptoms, the lack of energy and general ill health. But with the first 8 doses she took, a month later, Lyme didn't turn up again. A month after that, so 2 months afterwards, it was very mild and then went away. The third month afterwards, it came back in all its glory. We got some KIB to her, and we were able to reduce the effect of the symptoms. But she bought 16 from me then, so that she had 8 to do the next month, when she would count the days, 28 days, when the Lyme would reappear. and she buys from me every 3 months, 8 or 16 doses. Her husband has also moved on to KIB, and because he had, he then picked up Lyme disease, but he and she are still alive and still buying the product from me every 3 months. It's amazing. And she writes to me every month telling me what is happening. Nothing is happening, Richard. The Lyme is asleep. Next month, the Lyme is asleep. Oh, it's come back. But I took my dose 2 days before. And it, yeah, so really, I'm delighted with that. So that's how what I indicate as to dosing. Doesn't really matter the condition, bacterial, fungal or viral. It's more a case of that individual patient, how strong they are or whatever, and how long they have had and how serious the symptoms are for them. And what about COVID? Well, this is information that was given to me by a private individual who took COVID last year, 18 months ago. They caught COVID, did nothing, and then remembered about me and talked with a local practitioner who provided them with some. And this is what they did. Day one, symptoms showed. Day two, positive. Days 3 to 6, when I told you that they'd forgotten about me, didn't remember. Then they remembered. Day 6, they took 1 KIB. And that evening, they had extreme overnight sweating. The next day began to feel better. Day 8, better still, almost normal. And on day 10, they believed that they were free of COVID. And they could have been free earlier had they not waited until the 6th day in the afternoon before they took KIB 500. KIB is also going to be good for mental problems, I believe, because of what I think it can do in the gut. And the gut-brain axis, we know that what goes on in the gut can affect the brain. And the papers galore, the medical world have, in the last 10 years, recognized that the microbiome in the gut actually has an effect or is involved in many of our mental issues, with the not a cause of autism, but strongly influenced. And maybe it's the messages going backwards and forwards that are causing the problems and the discomfort. We see with so many autistic children and other children with mental problems, they're holding their stomachs because the pain, the anguish that is being caused for them. So I've developed, I'm sorry, I'm moving through these. I've lost my thread. I do apologize. I will try and get this back very soon. No, my thread is back. Right. So I created, because of the gut and my benefits on the gut, 5 hours gut dysbiosis to rebiosis. And I'll tell more about that later. Because my KIB 500, I believe, does not cure anything. It removes what is causing your problems. But your problems might be exacerbated because you're not healthy. So I get rid of the cause, which are the pathogens, but then the patient has to develop their own, improve their health situation. And that is the role of for you nutritionists. I've just give you the products. I believe that after we've got rid of the bad bacteria, we've got to put good bacteria in. I'm not personally in favor of probiotics because probiotics may not be the good bacteria that that patient needs. If you put in, everybody has their own unique gut format and their gut microbiome. Putting in something that is foreign and synthetic may not be doing any good. Better with the prebiotics to build up, feed those good bacteria of your own. And I've had something else. So that's KIB Pre, which is a blend of three prebiotics. And then I have another product that would help rebalance and enhance the your unique variant called Prefer. And Prefer is created by natural fermentation of herbs. And they break down to natural metabolites that are created by short chain fatty acids and various other components that are good for the gut. And that helps build up your own unique, because what you want is your bacteria to be enhanced. And we all know we are not what we eat. I was told off by a practitioner many years ago when I was trying to be very clever. Oh, yes, we're what we eat, aren't we? And he said, no, we're not. I was really taken back. And before I had a chance to say anything, he said, we are what we absorb. And if your gut isn't working, you won't absorb anything. All these wonderful diets that you're paying lots of money for, pouring down your throat, are going straight out the other end. They're not absorbed. You need to correct your gut microbiome. And that, so what are we doing? So you can help your clients look after their microbiome and working in that 5 R's that I've formulated. So Prefer, which is the manufacturer, is a company called Herbifirm. That's one that feeds and enhances and fulfills your own or your client's own bacteria, which are the best ones and the ones that are needed. We're also, in conjunction with other people, we're creating a large database where we've looked at what foods do what to them. To the microbiome. We've studied a lot of reports and so forth, and looking at individuals by assessing their stool report, we can see which are the most important of the bacteria and viruses that are in their gut. And so we can design a particular protocol for that particular individual. And it's unique to that patient at that time. And our guts do change over time because of the way we live, the way we act, the way we think, and the foods that we eat. What is also interesting, as I'm reading in recent months, is that our gut microbiome is affected by, we differ the same way that our blood type differs. And there are relationships by certain blood types have certain bacteria. Also our weight, as we know, our weight does affect our situation, and it's two-way. Our gut can enhance our obesity, just as our obesity can affect our gut, and also our height can affect our gut and what we should eat and shouldn't eat. So we need to look at individuals very much when we're talking about the gut and the treatments that are going to be gut related. And then stool reports. And stool reports are very good because they can tell you just exactly what bacteria, all the bacteria that are there. And the PCRs, the one that was used for when PCR was being used for COVID, we all got to know about that. But it's PCR tests that are very important on the stool, because that will tell you everything that's there. And this is the sort of result that can be shown This one is shown as a wheel, and each spoke is a different set or group or family or phyla or individual species of bacteria that is in that gut at that time. And we know, we're told, we're convinced that diversity is very important. And there, those ones that I've shown are only 50 of the ones that come from that particular report. And it's 50 because the printer color, the colors available on the printer, is only 50 different ones. But if we had enough colors, we could have had a much brighter color, a lot more shown on that circle. But I think it would be good if we got, and this is a theory, this is a wish for, a hope for, that if we started taking stool samples from children between 3 and 5 years old, because that's the time when your unique gut should have been established. And so we can see. And so if after 10 years, we can see that some ill health on a 15-year-old boy or something, we might look at the gut stool report and we can see what is missing, what has disappeared from the gut, what's been lost, or what's come in and is upsetting the balance. And then we might be able to treat that individual with the product A to remove this and product B to enhance that. And we can help them to look after their microbiome and get them to learn more that the microbiome is so important. And that's why diet is important, or bad diet is so important. If we see here, this is something I got from Frontier. The way that our gut changes over time, typical changes. What is interesting is the pink firmicutes and how little there is to begin. And then when we're 100 years old, it's, you know, 60, 70% of it is firmicutes. So my question is, are firmicutes making us old? So should we try and reduce all of those? I'm not clever enough. I'm clever enough to ask a question that's awkward and difficult, but I'm not clever enough to know the answer to that. And so I keep looking, and myself and my colleagues who are creating the database, we're going to keep looking at the different structures of microbiome and the different species that are down there and how people are feeling because of them. So, a doctor, without my knowledge or discussion with me, he had suffered himself for many years with multiple sclerosis and now was active on in investigating and research what could happen. He was a GP, and many of his patients who had autoimmune diseases, whichever one it was, whether it was Hashimoto's, lupus or whatever, all had food intolerance. So he did a study of his own on 12 of his patients, 11 patients and himself. And the aim of the study was to see about changes in the gut. He believed that my product would alter the gut balance and that it would remove bad things and that this would then have an effect upon food intolerances. So if he measured the food intolerances and compared the changes in those with the stool changes, he could see if there was any effect from the patients. Did they have less intolerance? And did they have better feeling guts? So it was 10, not 12, sorry. 10 patients, all with autoimmune. And the food intolerances ranged from 40 up to 200. And they had standard tests that were used to measure the food intolerances. I don't know what they were. I don't know what they measure or how they do it, but that was it. All of them took 4 doses. And the food intolerance scores dropped significantly. And they all expressed feeling better. Then they took, with my 5 hours protocol, they took KIV pre. There was some positive effect on most patients, but some had no difference. And then using prefer, there were some that improved further using prefer. But it was the microbiome balance that they saw on the stool reports that changed a lot, a great deal. And it was the removal of what are typically considered to be pathogenic or undesirable or problem bacteria. And all expressed feeling livelier, more energy, and their mental acuity was so much better. So that was, for me, when he told me about it and sent me a report of 100 plus pages, it was amazing. It actually was what I would have expected, that KIB would have done something to the gut. It's supposed to. So excellent results, and from that a protocol could be created. But was it KIB that had done it? In vivo we'd seen, but did my KIB really get to the gut? Or was it absorbed in the mouth or in the esophagus or what? Difficult to tell. So that same doctor came up with, he said, Richard, you need, which we now call our three gut study, which was, I found a research organization that had they're in the Netherlands, and they've got what they call a mechanical gut, a mechanical alimentary canal. They've got a mouth, and then they've got an esophagus, then a stomach, and then a small colon, and then a large colon. All is in chemical glass reactor vessels and so forth. So they said, right, we will take three separate stools from three individuals that work for us. We know their medical history. Most important, we know their lack of antibiotic history. So they took three stools and mixed all three together. I'm glad they did this job and not me. Mixed all three, and then they split them out again, the mix, into three separate stools. And one was used as a control, and then they contaminated two others. One was contaminated with unfriendly bacteria. And the second one was contaminated with antibiotics. So we had a healthy, which was untreated, and the pure blend, and then two dysbiotic. The dysbiotic was one that had been treated with antibiotics, and the pathogenic, as I said, was contaminated with Clostridium difficile, Salmonella, and a couple of others. And then they washed those stools with KIB, just the one, and for a certain amount of time, short amount of time. And changes were assessed on the effects of the microbial fermentation. In other words, how much did the pH change? And did we produce short chain fatty acids and lactates? Did they change compared with all three? And the community composition, how did the diversity of the bacteria in the gut, how did it change? And that was with what they call shallow shotgun sequencing, using the PCR that we talked about earlier. So that showed that my ideas, my thoughts, yes, KIB 500 can get down, and then move on to prebiotics and so on. I put lots of stars next to the KIB 500 because I said earlier, my product is not a cure. It doesn't make the patient healthy. You, the practitioner, have got to come up with the right things to make the patient healthy. I'm the first step only. And KIB pre, mine is a blend of three prebiotics, but it might not be right for everybody. And I'll comment on that a bit later when I talk about SIBO. And the prefer might not be right for everybody. And the nutritionist diet, that's up to you and your skills. And then with the last one, the client, where they've got to have strength to change their lifestyle, their health, the way they behave, and so on and so forth. That sadly is where, as I'm sure you know, and you feel that it tends to fall down. Having done all these good things beforehand, they might go back to their smoking and too much drinking or lack of exercise or whatever. But for the 5 hours, number two, I'm not going to bang the table and say KIB pre has to do it and prefer has to be the one. Your skills with knowing what needs to be done for the patient and the various products that are around. There are many other prebiotics and some very clever ones, not just mine. Mine is a simple blend. There's people who've done more research on prebiotics. So I'm not going to say it's got to be KIB pre, but KIB 500 could be the start for any gut-based problems or gut-linked problems. And we'll come on to that later. So, what are the potential conditions that could benefit from KIB 500? Autoimmune, which we talked about that study, bacterial pathogens, wherever they are suspected or whether they are known to be present, that could be good, such as sepsis, in Candida and other fungal, COVID and other viral, gut dysbiosis and all the conditions that are associated with that, such as mental health and modern diseases, obesity and mental health and so on. Those all could possibly benefit from KIB 500 because we now realize and know and research is showing that the gut is involved and linked with them. Maybe not the cause, but as is ongoing or as a symptom of or consequence of bad lifestyle or infection. So the modern diseases, autoimmune, obesity, gut dysbiosis, mental health, many others. And also one I'm starting to look at is aged macular degeneration. The biggest cause worldwide of why people lose their sight. The macula is a tiny little thing at the back of the retina. But when it starts to deteriorate, then the central part of your vision starts to disappear, or the clarity disappears. And that area of problem gets bigger and bigger. It was never known in this country, it was so rare. Not appearing until early 1900s. And it also occurred at about the same time in Europe and in North America. It wasn't known in Japan until after the Second World War. And then it began creeping in. So I'm convinced, as are other people, not just me, people who've written papers, that diet is involved. We talked earlier about how the late Victorian time is when we progressed and had beautiful white bread. And when we had that lovely white sugar. And in Japan, they progressed onto American food when American soldiers and lifestyle took over in Japan. And so it's the late 50s when it started appearing in Japan, not known of before. So I'm hoping to start some sort of study on aging macular degeneration very soon. And gut-related diseases, the mental ones, depression, autism, dementia. I've treated, or my product has been used on people with depression, and it's disappeared. Their gut problems and their mental state. I knew one lady only who had bipolar. She was the wife of somebody who worked for me. And she was persuaded by her husband to try my product. She took it in the September. And bipolar condition, the SAD, comes in usually for her, it was January or February. She took it in the September and she didn't have any bipolar problems or SAD that following winter in December, January, February, March. She didn't have any bipolar problems. It was amazing. But almost anybody who's got bad guts and it's affecting their brain can benefit from KIB. And there are so many different conditions. Dementia, whether Alzheimer's, I don't know. I've not been able to get anywhere near people with Alzheimer's to talk about it or move them on. So, autoimmune diseases, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis, all of them, I'm sure would benefit. We have seen in that study that the doctor did with them, the KIB and then food intolerances. So that's what is possible for you with the people that you see. So at the beginning, I showed you a list of what I was trying to aim at achieve so many of the things of what is needed for what I thought was a perfect treatment for infection. And so here's how I measure what I've achieved. With antimicrobials, half of what are needed are achieved with antibiotics, antifungals, antivirals, and other treatments. And you've seen the thing. And with my OSCN, I can do pretty much all of them. The cost effective, where I got a yes and a no, is because my product, I believe, is not cheap. You would be selling it to your patients with the VAT and everything that has to go on, just over £60. And we know you can buy a strip of antibiotics for £5. So I'm not as cheap as antibiotics and so on. So that's why cost effectiveness has to be balanced. But some antibiotics are tens of thousands of pounds a go. So I'm yes and I'm no, and that's it. But I believe I've got all of those. And so I'm boasting, but then it's my product and I'm promoting it and showing you what I believe is possible. For it to be perfect, no. I don't think I'm there, but I'm struggling and will keep trying to be perfect. All the way along, I've listed references. I can show all of these and you can look at any papers. And these are the different ones. The chemistry of how it's made and where it's found, the viral work that people have printed. And there was one man, Dr. Luca, I think his name was, in Milan, north of Milan, who published a paper on COVID, saying that this is something that should work and so forth. So he found out about that as well. And others, we've got information where against a biofilm, it could be possible to penetrate a biofilm. On its own, I don't think OSCN can, but I'm looking at some things that could help carry it into, and milk and plants. I said earlier, plants, One thing I'd set out earlier, which I didn't write because you are based upon human medicine, I was hoping that what I could do was make it possible to be efficacious in the veterinary world and also in agriculture. And there are papers published and there are people working using my technology to create OSCN and spraying it on plants and prior to harvest when it's fully ripe and you want to pick it up. And I'm pleased to say it's particularly effective on grapevines for wine. It's very good there, and it stops a lot of the rotting or infectious materials getting into grapes. And there's work on, I did a trial on bananas, which was great. That was many, many years ago. And when you get a banana, and if you watch it and you get the nice, there's three areas. There's the knuckle, which is the, you might say, that the branch bit that all bananas are joined to. And then there's the elbow where you break it off from the banana. And then there's the banana skin itself, and you get yellow spots. And the people out in Montserrat Island, they washed whole lots of bananas, dunked them into a bath of OSCN, and it held off these brown spots for a couple of weeks. Coming back to the very beginning, I first tried this in the food industry, which is how I did the banana trial, but I showed it to Tesco and to the food processors or the vegetable processors, who would chop up the lettuce and put it into the bags, which you can then buy in the likes of Tesco's and Sainsbury's. And they always wash it. They wash it with chlorine because they've got to get rid of, there's no cooking taking place, they've got to get rid of any pathogens that might be around. And chlorine's very effective. And my product tested at Camden Food Research. They did a test there, compared me with chlorine, and I was as good as chlorine. But chlorine costs nothing, very, very cheap. And my product, and Tesco said they loved it. The food processors said they loved it. It's great. Let's have it. But both said the other had to pay. And because the food processors said they can't afford it, and Tesco refused to, Tesco and Sainsbury's and John Lewis, all three, it wasn't just Tesco, they all three said no. And it meant an investment for 3 or 4 years to build the equipment of about £60,000 for each processing plant. And that was more than they were willing to invest and lose. So I didn't make anything there. And I'd spent 2 years pushing this because I was in the food industry. But when I saw how good it was, I used to joke to them, if some of their workers fell into the chlorine bath as the lettuce was flowing through, they'd come out feeling very poorly, if not die. If you fell into my bath, they'd come out healthier than before they went in. And that's silly comment like that. That persuaded me myself that I was failing going to the food industry, but I had something that was so good. So that's why I turned it round and redeveloped the formulation and so on, so that it could be made in human size. A lady with a horse recently, the horse, I didn't know what it is. She said the horse was coughing and really no energy. And she was a doctor, but she got this horse who had problems. And so she got one of these big, something to push the liquid into the horse. So she did that, and on two successive days, and on the fourth day, the horse was running around, no cough, nothing. And the test showed that it was infected with chlamydia, which, okay, so these infections get everywhere. It's not just us humans that get it. And somebody did it on fresh flowers, and they told me they lasted a bit longer than would to be expected. So we're getting at viruses, and the viruses and pathogens all of these, they attack every living thing, not just humans and animals, but plants and insects. And so when we all start moving, drop beef and we start eating insects, maybe I'll come up with an insect spray so that the insects aren't carrying any pathogens into them. So.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not finished. Oh, you're not finished. Oh, sorry. Interrupting.
So that's what we've done. So what am I planning? I won't be very long now. As I said, I've got a SIBO study, which is underway, working with practitioners in the UK to bring patients that have got SIBO. And I will be writing about that later. I'm then going to do some work on viruses. I'm hoping to do some proper study on COVID. I know it works, but just me saying it, of course, anybody can say they've got something to cure something. So I wanted to show proper tests and a study on COVID, and I'm hoping very soon to start something on HIV. Then a mental study. We talked about autistic children or depression. So a couple of conditions that have been fully diagnosed by psychiatrists as well as by clinical before and after, and AMD, aging macular degeneration. I'm hoping when I see an eye surgeon next week that he will have some guidance, some ideas of how it could be carried out. And then I'm happy to look at other conditions and to receive your suggestions of those. And I would be happy to try and answer any questions. And Kate, I now allow you to interrupt me.
Ta-da, here I am.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, well, listen, we as I say, I have from good authorities a big fan of yours within our team at the network. So, so thank you very much. I did have a few questions. I don't know how much time you've got, but the first question was that I know somebody who's got lung damage, possibly actually from the vaccine.
Yes.
Which seems to be the case after the second Pfizer shot. And so it's a spike protein. There's a spike, probably a spike on the lung. It's definitely causing inflammation. So obviously, given that it's not actually the virus, is there any chance, for your brain to work for something like that? And on from that, they've had to take oral steroids to lessen the inflammation in the lungs through a puffer, and obviously it's creating candida in the mouth. So they're suggesting antibiotics. So it's like, is there any way out of that myriad issue?
Okay, I'm glad, actually very glad that this question came first, because what I've been talking, gung-ho, it sounds, with me listening to what I've been saying, as KIV, well, is the answer to everything. Well, it's not. And you can, it's only good when you actually have an infection there. It will get at that infection. But it's no good taking it today and hoping it will stop you getting infected tomorrow, because it doesn't provide any defense. It's an aggressive offensive against a pathogen that is there. So
yeah,
coming back to your question, the lung damage and the fact that if that's not linked to an infection, I can do nothing. But it might, but then the second part, you said this candida is coming in the lungs. Maybe candida has found a way of getting into this inflammation and the damage that's there. So the second part is again a nice question, because I have looked at generating a fine mist with the KIB liquid using what do you call these?
Nebulizer.
Nebulizer, but nebulizers tend to be very small, only take a few mils. So an ultrasonic nebulizer it works very well. So that you connect it and a tube and a mask over your face. Mm. And yes, you can breathe it in. Some people, when they've got a lung infection, haven't got any energies and they can't suck it in. But if we can create around them a haze, well, not quite a haze, a mist of hypothiocyanate solution, they can be breathing that in. But for the candida, they could take a mouthful of the KIB solution and hold it in the mouth and swirl it around and gargle with it. That's one way that it can be done for candida that might be in the mouth. And talking of candida, we've also had it reported that it has removed candida in the brain. Somebody who had it there, a lady who had it. This molecule, as we saw at the beginning, is very small. I mean, antibiotics could be tens of thousands, 50,000 molecular weight, a lot of atoms in there. We've only got three, just 74 molecular weight. So it passes very easily through the brain barrier, the blood-brain barrier. And that's why I think we get a good amount of OSCN absorbed through in the buccal cavity. So we get straight into the blood. And I might do a trial soon if I can find enough volunteers to have on a blood test of blood coming. They would drink the product or keep drinking it. And then we take a tube of blood out and keep assessing it. Is OSCN getting into the blood? That's just something, I don't know how it gets there. Does it fall down? And maybe you should drink a huge amount of OS of KIB if possible. So a big lump falls down your throat and into your stomach, and then there's no solids there, so it'll pass quickly through to the small colon and then to the big colon. So that's just some fine tuning I need to do. But coming back to the mist, yes, generate this with an ultrasonic device and then breathe it in. And you can buy ultrasonic devices on the internet for £20. And they're
so
very,
what's an ultrasonic device ultimately?
You put a little, take my cup here. You fill something like that, a see-through glass or plastic with the liquid. You put the top on, and the bottom of that device has got an ultrasound creation situation. So you see the liquid sort of fizzing and bubbling, and then a vapor comes off.
Mm.
And at the top, you've got not a mouthpiece, but you've got a cover with a tube coming out, which goes to your mouth.
Yes.
For the mask, you suck in that.
Because the problem with the nebulizers, in effect, is that they've just got that much liquid. Is that what you're saying, yes. The general ones?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
They would just take 50 or 80 mils, so you can do it. One warning, which I'm going to put this on my website, and warning, it does make it warm. And when it gets warm, OSCN deteriorates very quickly.
Mm.
So just do it for 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And give it time to cool down and then do it again.
Right.
But you can, you're not putting it all in at one time. So you do it for a few minutes, 3 or 4 times. And it's got warm, throw that away and top it back up again.
Yeah. Okay. So that, So you just make up the KIB solution, and then you would use the ultrasonic nebulizer. It would you do it for 2 or 3 minutes, cool it down, you chuck it away, and do it,
yes.
And get another solution. Yeah.
Yes, it is. You should be able to do it, you know, say for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then wait, and then another 30 seconds of breathing in. Yes.
And so how long is the piece of string, but how long would that sort of protocol go on, do you think, before you saw results? And that, I mean, is it a day thing and that's it, or is it like a weekly thing, a monthly thing, or is that just like how long is a piece of string, or till symptoms disappear?
It's the how long is a piece of string. I have no idea.
Okay.
I've not done it. I've not had a chance to try it with anybody. I've no idea. Sorry.
No, well, fair enough. I will pass that on to the relevant person, and I'll give you some feedback on how that works.
Please do, yes. Yeah. And I'm happy to work together with two or three practitioners who might have a client each that for whatever, it's a lung infection, or it's, you know, the top of the throat or something like that, somewhere where they think, or in the nose. It's very good in the nose. KRB works well in the nose, whether you drink it or breathe it in. So, yes.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting because, of course, the root cause of the doctors giving the steroids is because it's an inflammatory condition, but the inflammation must be coming from something, which might be an ongoing infection. It might be just parts of spike protein left in the lung, but it might be another infection which has just got entrenched in the lungs, you know.
Yes, so you know, they get these infections delivered by the breathing apparatus, the artificial lungs that they're put on when they've got severe COVID and so forth. And as we know, there's many reports that come out and say that almost nobody dies of COVID. If they're going to die, it's because they've got a bacterial infection in the lung.
Yeah.
Which isn't there because of damage caused by the vaccine. It's because it's got there because the health of the individual is so weak, it's easy for pathogens to get in. And they can be delivered on hospital devices.
Yes. Okay, well, the other question I've got, slightly diverse, is like for weight loss generally, as a normal healthy person, what about just generally weight loss?
I don't know. I can have some ideas. If obesity, when are we obese? If we're just a few pounds, a few kilos over what we would like to be, we're not quite obese, but we are overweight. And if we're not losing it, a dysbiotic gut can end up with...
that's what I'm thinking, really, that for people, you know, some people, it's really a dysbiosis problem, isn't it?
It could well be. Mm. And maybe it's a case of something I'd always thought of right from the beginning, knowing, because I had this feeling that my product would be really very clever, is that we're all picking up infections all the time. And most of the time, the immune system can cope with it. But if we get a bit run down, and we do because we're tired, because our kids have kept us awake all night or something. And then we pick up an infection and the immune system then has to go to work. And so a lot of our energy goes to the immune system and we feel just lethargic and so forth. Maybe everybody should take one KIB a month, every month, just as a helping the immune system, because you'll have something there that's been kept under wraps, under control. And something I was told years ago, to my amazement, is that the immune system doesn't always kill everything. It keeps them damped down. And so as more come along, there's more and more work keeping these low, low level infections under control. But, you know, so it's like having one big infection when you've got 20 small infections. So to take one of those as a, not a health, not an insurance policy, but just a booster.
Yeah.
Instead of a COVID booster, have a KIB immune system and gut microbiome booster. But bear in mind, everything I've said is by the man who invented it, the man who makes it, the man who makes money from it. Please bear that in mind, that I'm not trying to defend myself, but I'm protecting you. Please don't think this is the answer to everything. It's not. It's really very, very clever, though. And that's
Richard, obviously. absolutely a point taken. Thank you very much. And actually, you know, it's interesting because people from supplement company or device companies, or whatever, obviously always think their product is fantastic. But we appreciate your honesty. And I feel that people give you feedback and let you know what it's useful for, what, you know, you know, everything's got limitations. There's not one magic bullet, unfortunately, in life. And we, as practitioners, then have to navigate the skill area to know what is best for our clients. And, you know, and they can keep in touch with you to give you feedback on how it's worked. So I think it can be very symbiotic. And yeah, thank you for your straightforwardness. So so how do they get a hold of you or the company or order it? Or
practitioners, we will not sell to the general public. They can't access our site. The only people that can access our site are practitioners who register with us, and then they're given codes so that they can access and buy the product, and their clients. So if a practitioner is registered with us and they can tell Mrs. Jones, or we recommend 2KIB 500, go onto KIB website and use this code. And so that gives them access to the code, and they can buy KIB 500, KIB Pre and Prefer, but only whilst they're using that code. Because I don't want my product being misunderstood, because you've heard how wonderful I said it is, and other people will think, oh, it does everything. And so they will take 2KIB 500 because they've got a broken leg and the leg doesn't heal. And so they're immediately on one of these online forum, KIB 500 is useless. I should have my money back, and so on. So I only want it to be used properly, because I do know, like all good things could be spoiled. Antibiotics have been overdone, and it spoiled the use of some of them now. And I would not like that to happen with the KIB. So I look at things to protect it. I don't want the online forums getting involved at all. One thing I would like to say to practitioners, I'm delighted to know that in Canada, the government has recognized nutrition is so important, and they're pushing this through. Sadly, they're pushing it through pharmacies, and they're expecting the pharmacists to give out the nutritional advice. But in the USA, at the end of this month or sometime, there's a huge discussion right at the top about diet and health, and the two have to be together. And I think it will come in this country. And I just hope that they will have the sense not to say a doctor who's had 4 hours of nutrition training can deliver it, but they will come to their senses, and every GP practice will have one of you practitioners there, nutritional practitioner. The doctor will say, yes, it's got this condition, but you, the practitioner, will know what food and foods more than supplements, what food is going to be right for that person. I do hope that will come very soon. And I wish you all luck, and I will hope for it. Yes.
Well, thank you very much for that. And before the people who own the bug eating agenda take over, so hopefully may the best man win on that, or woman. So so with that, we say thank you so much, Richard. Stay where you are for the moment while I end the call. But thank you to everybody listening. And Richard, again, what's the website?
www.kibhealthcare.com.
Fantastic. Yes. And I know you want to be in touch, letting Richard know how it's been useful for you, and good, solid feedback with Richard directly is the way to go. So thank you so much. And everybody listening, goodbye. Thank you.
Goodbye and thank you.
So hold on just a sec. Thank you so much. That was great. And I didn't matter about the panel. So fantastic. That was really great, you know. And you can tell, you know, with your straightforwardness and honesty where you stand. And it's refreshing, you know, because as I said, you know, I have hundreds of brands that I work with in effect on their network. And everybody always says, my product is basically going to launch the next pig in space, you know, and it doesn't do everything. So thank you for that honesty. The other thing is, do you know Patrick Holford. Obviously, you know of him. He's a massive cheese in our industry.
I've never met him. I've seen his name many times, but no, I don't know him.
Well, it might be just worth, I don't know, you know, he can be a bit funny, but I can introduce you because he's got a big work on Alzheimer's at the moment. He's got a big sort of drive on Alzheimer's, and it might just be worth just saying, you know, look, you're looking at this area, and you know, if you are, I can, you know, just have a think about it, whether you want me to introduce you. But he's got a drive on Alzheimer's and dementia, and he's got a protocol for that. And it's just like, strikes me, since he's really involved with that, he might ultimately have the resources and people to test whether, you know, something like your product could be useful in that arena, because obviously it's a huge problem that we're dealing with.
And if it is, if he's of the opinion that the gut microbiome and infections are involved in causing Alzheimer's, then I'm convinced I could do something.
Well, listen, I mean, Patrick is, he's obviously, everybody who's ION trained, that's me, the Institute of Optimum Nutrition, is, it comes from his stable. So, and he invented nutritional therapy in this country. He was the person who started ION. ION was the first, and all of these colleges for nutritional therapy came afterwards. You know, but he's like everybody who's reached quite a high status in his profession. He can be a bit, don't take it personally if he's a bit sort of, but I'll just flip an intro. I mean, I'm doing a talk with him actually next month, which is through the Hub. So we do a live talk every month, which is called the Nutrition Network Hub. And he is on, so October, I think, and he is launching, I can't remember what it is, an app, I think, to do with Alzheimer's. And he, I mean, obviously, but there might be synergy. You know, he's looking also, I think, for funding to get this study funded or to get the app funded. And, you know, obviously he always does come up trumps, and he's not afraid to speak his mind and all of those things. So I can, you know, have a think about it after what I've said. And if you do want an introduction, you feel it can be useful, have a look at Snoop at what he's doing. And I can just flip an introduction and say, look, I've just had this talk with Richard, and I think you're going to find it fascinating even just to have a chat. So you can go from there.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, okay. I will.
An introduction, even if he says, no, thank you.
Yes. I'm not going to go, isn't it?
Yes. And what's his name? Jürgen Klinghardt.
Yeah.
I met him at a presentation. An open afternoon organized by ICANN magazine. And he came dashing over to me. I've got to have your product in my range, Richard.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that blew me away, because that man is like Holford, absolute superstar, and done so much. And so he then turned around to his UK man and he said, get this man's product. So it was wonderful. Yes.
Well, that's all we want, really. I mean, that ultimately what we forget, and as practitioners, not what we forget, we never forget it, but, you know, ultimately we're here for, egos and everything apart, you know, all of us, we have that. We're here to serve, and we're here to serve the you know, what I used to call the patient in the old days, but what we call the client now. We're here to serve that client and to help people. And, you know, I think we should all work to that. And obviously you have been. So thanks for your work.
Well, thank you for this opportunity to put forward to all of those wonderful members in your wonderful organization and network and so on and so on, et cetera, et cetera. It's great. It's the best way to get it out there.
Yes,
they can see me, and they can, and I'm behind it. So I'm not a puppet or long way down the line or so on. It was my chemistry. I designed this, but I found it in nature.
Yeah,
and nature has the answer. Chemistry is the key, and I've used that for 40 years. It's controlled my thinking about. I used to work with seaweeds, and I designed seaweed wound dressings. And I don't know if you knew ever, I'm sure Gaviscon is the name well known to you. Well, I was involved in the development of that, again with seaweeds. And it 10 years after I'd left that business, I needed Gaviscon. I developed ulcers myself and I couldn't lie down at night. And then I took Gaviscon and I had no idea just how fantastic it was. I just didn't appreciate it because I was doing the chemistry and I could see it. And my role was to make the stuff so that it could flow, that it could be thick, but it could flow. And there I had to manipulate the seaweed and so on and so forth. But I had no idea just how wonderful, really didn't, how smart myself and my colleagues had been. Wow, yes. Yeah, so that's me. And nature and its chemistry and how to use it, I've loved and still do.
Well, listen, thanks for your work. And with that having been said, thank you for your time and we'll connect really soon.
Yes, please. Thanks very much, Kate, and good luck to Nutrition Network.
Thank you very much. All right, go well. Goodbye.